right, these apostles were wanting to make sure that these new Christians were strengthened and encouraged. So it says they went back to those cities and they strengthened and they encouraged the new disciples, saying, through many tribulations we must enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, how in the world does that strengthen and encourage you to have somebody tell you, through many tribulations we must enter the kingdom of heaven? Well, first of all, it helps you because it's reality. Every cult, every false teaching lives in a dream world. And they tell you that if you become a Christian, everything's going to be exciting, everything's going to be, you know, you'll have lots of money, you'll never even have a sore throat. And, beloved, if that's what the Bible actually taught, do you realize how despairing you would be? Every true child of God, the Bible encourages us because it fits reality. And what the Bible says to you, Christian, or new Christian, whoever you are, or mature Christian, through many tribulations, you must enter the kingdom of heaven. And we don't like those two words. First of all, many. We don't like that. Through many tribulations. Little ones, big ones, deceitful type tribulations. Some of them hit you broadside. Some of them are subtle, just kind of eat away at you. All kinds, all shapes, all sizes of tribulations. Many of them. Through many of them, and the second word we don't like is the word must. Through many tribulations, you must enter the kingdom of heaven. And the trials that God gives to each individual child of His, they're different kinds of trials. Not everybody has exactly the same things, but everybody has them. You know that song, some through the fire, some through the flood, and so on. It says, but all through the blood. Well, everybody's got to go through the fire, and everybody's got to go through the flood. All through the fire, all through the blood, all through water, all through deep water. Everybody's got trials and tribulations. You must have that in order to enter their kingdom. Now, we're going to see why in a little bit. But they strengthened and encouraged them just by telling them the truth, first of all. And secondly, they strengthened and encouraged them because if you're forewarned, you can be forearmed. You can prepare your heart and realize this is not some strange thing happening to me. First thing we always think is, this is strange. What's going on? But God has told us ahead of time. Let's just look at one verse on this. 1 Timothy chapter 3. Now this is not going to be a long message, but the stuff that I'm going to say to you is extremely important for you to lay hold of. I know many of you have already laid hold of it, but some of you haven't. But in 1 Thessalonians 3, verses 1 to 4, he says, when we could endure it no longer, we thought it best to be left at Athens alone, and we sent Timothy, our brother and God's fellow worker in the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you as to your faith. There's the same two words, strengthen and encourage. So that no man may be disturbed by these afflictions, for you yourselves know that we have been destined for this. You have been destined. God has predestined you to go through afflictions. Why? Because He's predestined you to become like Christ. And that's the only way you're going to be like Him. All right? Verse 4, for indeed when we were with you, we kept telling you in advance that we were going to suffer affliction, and so it came to pass, as you know. So it's encouraging and strengthening to a new convert for him to realize, I got some hard stuff ahead of me. God's going to help me through it, but I know I've got some hard stuff ahead of me. And I mean, some of you all know as believers what it's like to be curled up in a ball, agonizing, trying to make it through. And it looks like maybe I'm not going to make it. Now God has told us ahead of time. And He's helped us tremendously by the things that He's taught us in these three passages we looked at. Now, what do we look at? We looked at the vine, the pruning of the vine. We looked at, first of all, I think we read Peter. We looked at the purifying of a metal. Secondly, the pruning of the vine. And thirdly, the chastening of a son. Now, all three of those are teaching the same thing, three different ways. And there's three lessons that I want us to learn from these three pictures that God gives us. First one that He's saying to us, first thing that He's saying is the preciousness of the believer in the sight of God. The preciousness of the believer in the sight of God. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you get into a trial? I've done something wrong. God's not with me. Maybe I'm not even a Christian. And so the first thing you've got to lay hold of is how precious you are to God. Now, what are we talking about here? Well, think of the metal, first of all. God says, I'm refining you. Like there in 1 Peter, remember what it says? The trial of your faith, the refining of your faith being much more precious than gold that perishes. So let me just ask you a question. God says He's refining you. What do men refine? You take time to refine dirt? Go out and get some dirt out here and try to refine it. Spend thousands of dollars refining that dirt. Nobody does that. You don't try to refine rocks. What do you refine? You refine something that's precious. So God is saying to you, you're precious to me. That's why I'm going to put you in the fire. The first thing you've got to remember when you go into the fire is this is happening not because God hates me. It's happening because I am so precious to Him. Isn't that wonderful? That's what He's telling us by this picture of the refining of a metal. Well, what else? He says, I'm pruning you. Now, every branch in me that bears fruit, He prunes it. In other words, He's saying the branch that bears the fruit is the one that gets the knife. If you're getting the knife, it means that you're doing something right. It doesn't mean God's forsaken you. It doesn't mean that He's angry at you. It means that He's working on you. It means you're bearing fruit. There's something going on where you're bearing some fruit. And so He gives you the knife. Every branch in me that bears fruit, He prunes it, He purges it. At the very time it seems like God doesn't love you, that's the time He's the closest to you. I saw this little plaque said, a gardener is never so near as when he's pruning. You don't feel like that, do you? He's never so near. He gets right in there among the branches and cuts that thing, you know. He's right there beside you to do that. All right? What about the chastening of a son? He says, I'm chastening you. All right? Who does a father chasten? Whom the Lord loves, He chastens. And scourges every son whom He receives. He doesn't care about the illegitimate. He cares about the son, the true child. Because He's wanting him to become an heir one day. Now you see what God's saying to us in every one of these pictures. He's saying, you are precious to me. The preciousness of the believer. That's the first thing to realize. That's the way the apostles strengthened and encouraged the disciples concerning their tribulations that lay ahead. First thing is, realize that you're precious to God. That's the only reason He's doing what He's doing. Second thing God's saying in every one of these pictures, the painfulness of the process. The painfulness of the process. All right? We talked yesterday some about a blast furnace. A couple of times I've looked into the mouth of a blast furnace, and it is terrifying. You know, people say, that, you know, a lot of sinners have in their head, one day, you know, I'm going to stand before God, and He's going to put me into hell, and I'm going to bear up against it. You know what that's like? Everybody, it's just like taking a spider and throwing it into the mouth of a blast furnace. You will yield instantly to God's wrath. Immediately, you'll yield to the wrath of God. Now, we're talking here about the refining of silver in a blast furnace, or gold in a blast furnace. You put that in there, and that thing is a throat of fire like you cannot imagine. And that does not feel good. And God says, I'm going to melt you down and skim that stuff off, and I'm going to cool you off again, and I'll stick you in. It talks about silver refined in a furnace of earth. seventh time through many tribulations. So he gets done with one. Eventually, there's time for another one because he's going to conform you to the image of his son. So blasted, heated, skim, cool, blasted, like silver refined in a furnace of earth seven times. It's a painful process. Who can abide the day of his coming? He's like a refiner's fire. Who can stand when he appears? He'll set like a refiner and purifier of silver, and he will purify the sons of Levi. That's us, that we might offer to the Lord an offering in righteousness. Isn't that what we want? All right? The painfulness of the process. John 15, the vine, what happened? How does he prune it? The knife, he cuts living tissue being cut off. He cuts off a living part of you. It hurts. That's what he's saying. This is going to hurt. Every branch in me that bears fruit, he cuts it and slices it. You know, let me ask you a question. Have you ever felt the knife? Either, if you haven't felt the knife, you're either not a child of God or you haven't gone very far. You remember that Amy Carmichael poem? It says, "Don't you have any scar? Hast thou no scar? He cannot have traveled far who has nor wound nor scar." That comes from the knife. See? The painfulness of the process. Now what about the son? Whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Now I have had to discipline my kids sometimes pretty severely, but I've never scourged them. You know what the scourge was? You know what it was like when they scourged the Lord Jesus. A lot of men didn't live through the scourge. And that's the word God uses here. I mean, it's unbelievable. That scourge that the Romans used would tear a man open so bad that he couldn't live from the loss of blood. And God chooses that word. He says, whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. I mean, Lord, how could it be that hard, that painful? He says, I want you to realize when it hurts so bad that it's me and I'm doing it because I love you, because you're precious to me. All right? The painfulness of the process. The preciousness of the believer. The painfulness of the process. Now what else is he saying? In all three of these, the goal in view. It's the goal in view. All right? With the silver, with the metal, you put it in the fire, you're not doing that for fun. It costs a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort to refine silver, refine gold. You do that because you want to get that scum off and get the dross out, get that ugly stuff out of it. Probably won't believe this now, but I used to lift weights a lot when I was in high school and in college. And I wanted to have a set of lead weights. And so I was going to make my own lead weights. I went and bought a bunch of scrap lead and started melting it down on my stove and making my lead weights. Well, that's dangerous because you can get poisoning from that. But anyway, you would not believe that dirty lead. You start heating that up and melting it. You don't have to have a blast furnace because it melts real easy. It's not precious like some things. But whenever you melt it, it begins, as scum starts coming off. And I had a little fork, and I just scraped that scum off. And what? With lead, even with lead, it looks like silver. Now you look into that, that stuff is beautiful. Now God does it with us. He says, you're not lead, you're gold. And he heats you up. And what happens when he heats you up? The scum starts coming to the top. And you don't think you're getting better, you think you're getting worse. Because all the scum is there. And he says, now wait a minute, I'm just doing this so I can scum it, take this scum off. But at the time, you feel like you're doing worse than you were before. Because the scum rises to the top, but the Lord takes it off. He knows what he's doing. He gets the job done. He changes you. He doesn't do all this stuff just to hurt you. He's doing it to make you like Christ. Isn't that what you prayed? You prayed that he'd make you like Christ. That's what he's doing. He's putting you through that trial to get that scum off. That's the goal in view. And you know the saying that a lot of you probably heard already, but it's true. you want to get that cleaned off to where you can see your reflection in it. And that's what the Lord's doing. He's cleaning off the scum until he can see his reflection. What about the vine? What's the goal in view? More fruit. He that bears fruit. See every branch in me that bears fruit? He slices on it that it might bear more fruit. That's the goal in view. Now, if you're a Christian, I presume you've been praying God to make you more fruitful. You know how he's going to do it? He's going to cut. And he does it so that he can make you more fruitful. Right after my co-pastor and I moved to Missouri and began the ministry that we're in now, many years ago, we were both single, and God had begun to save some people, and we were working together out on a farm, his grandfather's farm, trying to get some money. We got down to where we didn't have any money at all, and he and I were working there, and we lived in this little camper, and it was so small that you had to stand aside, you know, against the wall and let the other guy walk past you. You had to spit your toothpaste out the door, you know. There wasn't any... And we started getting on each other's nerves, and, you know, all this stuff was building up. It was God put us in that kind of situation. And I'd go out to one side of the farm, and I'd be over there painting. And I was thinking about him all the time, you know, look at what he did. And he was on the other side of the farm painting, thinking about me. And one day I came into that trailer, and we started talking, and pretty soon he just burst into tears. And he started telling me things about myself. He said, you know, it's not anything you do. It's just the way you are. That's encouraging, isn't it? And I got in my car. I had an old 62 Chevy, too, that had the floorboards rusted out of it. And I drove about 15 miles away, and I sat there in a parking lot with my Bible. I said, Lord, this is too hard. Nobody can submit to another man like that. And I opened my Bible up, and right in the middle of John 15, every branch in me that bears fruit, he purges it. You know what God said? He said, you're not bound to a man, you're bound to me. I'm the one doing this. Every branch, and he said, I'm not doing it because you're worthless to me. I'm doing it because you're bearing fruit. And I'm the one that was talking to you through that brother. It was not him, it's me. And I'm pruning you in order that you might bear more fruit. And at that point, I'm able to say, thank you, Lord. And you bow before God. You see, he's the one. He prunes it. Now, he uses people to do it sometimes, doesn't he? A lot of times. You know, David picked up those 5 smooth stones. Well, how'd they get smooth? They weren't smooth by laying around by themselves. They were smooth by rolling against each other. There was a brother down in Arizona. I visited him. He's got these beautiful rocks. Where do you get those rocks? Just picked them up in the desert. Well, that was true, partly. But he put those rocks in a tumbler, and for days they grind against each other. You know how that works. Now, if you want to be an ugly, unfinished product, you just get yourself hide in a piece of cotton somewhere, and you'll stay that way. But if you get around other saints, God's going to put you together with rocks, and you start tumbling. That hurts. But he's doing it in order to get fruit, to change you, to make you different. Okay, so the purpose of the pruning is that we might bear more fruit. That's the goal in view. Now, I'm almost finished, but before I finish, I want to read a little bit to you about this thing of pruning. We have a company in Missouri called Starks Brothers that sells fruit trees. And they're known all over the nation. And I bought a cherry tree from them. They sent out a little book that tells you how to prune your cherry tree when you get it. And I just want to read you the gospel according to Starks Brothers. All right? To get a new fruit tree off to the right start, nothing is more important than pruning at planting time. Yet all too often this initial pruning is overlooked by the home grower. Many beginners seem to balk at the basic idea, you know, cutting off those limbs. But if the bare root tree is left unpruned, it may not grow well, and in dry weather it may not grow at all. It will take longer to bear the plentiful crops that it should. You know why God prunes us? You're seeing it here? All right? You might fear that it hurts the tree. Or you might think it's wasteful to give your tree a substantial setback in size. You might even mistakenly feel that this pruning will delay the first crop of fruit. In all these cases, quite the opposite is true. Here's why you should prune. There are three basic reasons: survival, stimulation, and shaping. Isn't that why God, look at what He does. Survival, stimulation, shaping. Usually after a single growing season, the tree you prune will be bigger than a matching unpruned tree. Isn't that amazing? Cut it back and it'll be bigger. It's not really difficult. Just grit your teeth and do it. Even though you may be cutting off more than seems right, it's far better to overprune at planting time than to underprune. I can assure you, now this family has grown fruit trees for generations. This guy may be fourth generation, I don't know. I can assure you that this pruning will result in a sturdier, healthier tree. You'll be getting the right start toward a strong framework, and you'll be rewarded with bigger, better crops of fruit. That's why God does what He does. All right, last one. The goal in view for the son. He disciplines us for our good, that we might become partakers of His holiness. See, the same thing. Every picture teaching the same thing. The preciousness of the believer, the painfulness of the process, the end result, partakers of His holiness. Now there's two things I want to say to you in closing. He says in Hebrews 12, "My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you are rebuked by Him. For whom the Lord loves, He chastens, and scourges every son whom He receives." My son, despise not, nor faint. There's two things that we tend to do when we get in a trial. First of all, you despise it. Say, why do I have to go through this? Don't do that, he says. Don't do that. Whom the Lord loves, He chastens. Don't despise it. Don't lightly esteem it. Don't look down on what God's doing. Second thing, don't faint when you're rebuked by Him. Just get throw in the towel and say, this is too much. I can't take it. Don't do that. I think I'm done.